This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union with 125,000 members and 50,000 retirees. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast on iTunes. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone and search for DC 37 State of the Union. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and check out our website, www.dc37.net. If you have any comments about our show, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. As I've mentioned before, we tape this show on Thursday mornings. We air 3 days later, and that's always a bit of a challenge when the topic of conversation is national politics, and particularly Donald Trump. Tuesday were the midterm elections, featuring one of the highest voter turnouts in recent history. Here in New York, DC 37 helped finally break the Albany legislative gridlock by helping several local state Senate candidates to victory, and the state's top elected officials were all reelected with union support. Governor Andrew Cuomo defeated Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, and U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand each scored easy victories, and Letitia James, the city's public advocate and a stalwart DC 37 ally, became New York State's first African-American attorney general. DC 37 volunteers and activists canvassed members by phone and were out in force across the city. Among those receiving a boost from the union was former city comptroller John Liu, who won election in the 11th Senate District in Queens. We congratulate them on their victories and look forward to continuing to working with them on an agenda that benefits all New Yorkers. Nationally, the Democrats won a majority in the U.S. House of Representatives, winning back control of the chamber after 8 years. In a historic victory for female candidates, at least 117 women won elections across the country, taking over high-level political positions, including House seats, Senate seats, and governorships. Among the victors was New York's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who became the youngest woman ever elected to Congress. More history was made by Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, who became the first two Muslim women elected to Congress, and Charisse Davids and Deb Haaland, the first two Native American women to win seats in the House. There were also important victories in state houses across the country. In Wisconsin and Illinois, anti-union governors Scott Walker and Bruce Rauner were sent packing. These were huge victories for working men and women. In 2011, Scott Walker stripped Wisconsin's public employees of nearly all their collective bargaining rights after a three-week standoff that brought tens of thousands of protesters to the Capitol and transfixed the political world. Bruce Rauner was the elected official behind the Janus v. AFSCME Supreme Court case. His original plan was to encourage public employees to contribute nothing toward the cost of union representation. He filed suit in Illinois. The Illinois court said he had no standing, so he found Mark Janus to bring that case, and the Supreme Court ruled in that earlier this year. So all that happened on Tuesday. The Democrats win the House of Representatives. The Republicans retain control of the Senate. And on Wednesday morning, the President of the United States of America tweeted that he was willing to work with Democratic lawmakers. And then all hell done broke loose. Joining us now is Newsday senior political columnist Dan Janison. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, Chris.
So I just laid out this long list of what happened. And the president tries the conciliatory route for a couple of hours, and then he warns Democrats not to investigate him. He fires the attorney general of the United States. He has a CNN reporter thrown out of a press conference and suspends his press credentials. Daniel, just another week in the Trump twilight zone?
Yeah, well, the theme here is anxiety, high anxiety in the high offices of the land. You have the president reacting to the loss of the House. First of all, he tells himself a few self-comforting lies about how it was really a win. But you can tell from much of what you described that there is trouble.
Right.
He does, you know, the stroking of Nancy Pelosi as the new leader of the House is almost pro forma. That's probably something he can't help himself with, you know, is like, because everything kind of reverts to a talk show, you know, we're going to have her as a guest, you know, and it's, his little feud with Jim Acosta from CNN. That's also has to be rooted in some kind of angst, because why bother?
Well, I was, you know, I was early in the day. He tweets out. What was interesting to me was his tweet about working with Democrats, mm-hmm. which is the, I guess, the traditional way of dealing with a morning after like the one mm-hmm. he just had. He is unable to hold that moment for more than 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that's on his mind is a warning to Democrats
himself
not to investigate him and his family. And there is something so...
And that is what he's anxious about.
And his anxiety comes out in this... I watched not the press conference on Wednesday, but I watched an earlier, just his use of language and his inability to hold a thought for longer than 30 seconds, where a contradictory thought comes into his mind and he speaks it. So that what you have as the recipient of his information is confusement and bewilderment and also appallment, if that's a word, at the President of the United States' use of language. And what you're saying, and again, we talk about this as folks who have watched Dan Janison and I go back to the basement of City Hall 20 years ago. We covered city politics together for the New York Post. We know Donald Trump as a New York character, and this is a New York character who the tabloids loved, because he was, you know, sort of wild and wacky. But now he is the President of the United States, of the greatest country on earth. And what he does now for the next 2 years, what do you think? Does he... I had a moment... I had a moment yesterday when I first saw the first tweet, when I thought that, you know, maybe we've had this whole thing wrong. Maybe it's better to go with honey rather than vinegar on this fellow. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, that's not going to work, because his first instinct isn't to embrace, is it?
No. You get into the pivot trap. You
right.
remember when he was pivoting.
Well, you brought up on a previous show, you said, remember when he was going to pivot to presidential?
There are no pivots.
But, you know, as...
There are divots, but there aren't pivots. I think that he was the only thing, you know, from a news perspective that I could point out is that people who watch him day to day were saying in social media and publicly, I guess the two are the same. There was an observation that he was particularly a mess yesterday,
At the press conference.
Yes, on a normal day, he communicates with less skill than your average city council person. But yesterday, he was agitated, and he seemed particularly, I don't know, off his game, such as he has a game.
But in terms of history, yesterday everyone was talking after Jim Acosta got his got kicked out of the press room and had his mm-hmm. credentials suspended. There was so much talk about and the Jeff Sessions firing the Attorney General of the United States.
Oh yeah, that.
There was so much talk about Watergate and so much taking us back to 1974 and 73. Mm-hmm. What do you think in terms of the historical significance of the? You know, we tend to.
You mean comparing to Watergate or
Yeah, comparing to Watergate.
Comparing to Watergate, you know, it's funny if you watch there's if you watch, there was a recent documentary on Bob Hope that showed on PBS, and to skip to the relevant part, Nixon is recorded on his tapes speaking to Bob Hope. And when he speaks to Bob Hope, he says to him words to the effect of, the Democrats are you know, the Democrats in the country don't think we can succeed in Vietnam, that this is a lost hope. He says, I believe they're wrong. Can you imagine Donald Trump saying, the Democrats think this and I believe they're wrong?
As opposed to,
say, they're part of the deep state conspiracy,
right.
sending killers over the border.
Oh, this
to
isn't
hang
funny.
Us, kill us. You know, this is in private.
Not too much talk about caravans in the last 36 hours.
You noticed that kind of slipped off the radar?
Yes, it did.
Ed
Rendell, former mayor of Philadelphia and former governor of Pennsylvania, he was on Fox News the other night, and he was warning Democrats, don't just investigate, legislate. And let me see if I can find the relevant. He actually said, at one point, Democrats must also not fall prey to the theory that we can't give President Trump a victory. If we propose significant legislation on issues such as infrastructure and a comprehensive immigration reform bill in the House and send it to the Senate, even if the president signs it, we can probably claim credit for beginning the process that solved two of the most pressing challenges facing our country. He was again saying, let's not get obsessed on investigating. Let's not make the next 2 years all about investigating the president. Let's try to get some legislation done. What do you think about the current environment that we're in and whether or not that is possible?
Well, you know, in working, I think, in Rendell's favor is the what was something that I think doesn't get mentioned enough, that the president is utterly passive when it comes to legislation. The Senate and House wrote the tax bill. The Senate and House balked on health care and balked on immigration. The Senate and House basically rejected his infrastructure plan and basically stalled his border wall. He does not lead. He does not negotiate. He does not really do much of anything in the legislative process except approve this and that or suggest this and that. And, you know, with all the roaring and carrying on, it's an interesting thing to notice that he really doesn't put much of an imprint. It's almost like he brands the building, but he doesn't develop it.
Right.
So I think Rendell is right in the sense that they can have an impact if they reach agreement with the Senate.
And if they can, well, and if they're willing to
and,
give.
And then Trump can decide whether he can use it to hype himself or not by signing it.
We're talking with Dan Janison. He's a senior columnist with Newsday and also the co-writer of The 1600, which is the newsletter on political affairs that you can get from www.newsday.com. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today, 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
Welcome back to State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm your host, Chris Policano. With us is Dan Janison, who is the political columnist for Newsday and also the co-author of The 1600, which is a newsletter that is available by email and also on the Newsday website, www.newsday.com. Have I got that right?
Yes.
Okay, well, then, thank you very much. Let's shift gears a little bit to local. We're talking about Donald Trump. We're talking about his reaction to the midterm results. And here in New York, as I mentioned in the earlier segment, Letitia James, who's someone who's been a strong ally of DC 37, she made history on Tuesday by becoming the first African-American attorney general in New York State. What can a New York State attorney general do to make Donald Trump's life difficult?
Well, the form is pretty well set, and was set under Underwood and before him, the unmentioned, before her, the unmentioned Schneiderman.
Unmentioned.
There is a lawsuit going on currently against the defunct, or the directors of the defunct Trump Foundation, demanding $28 million in payments as a result of the way the family ran its so-called charity foundation. Whether it turns into the parallel of the Trump University scam or not remains to be seen. But on a policy level, there are lawsuits from blue states such as California, that would bar offshore drilling, which is part of the administration's plan. It would bar resist certain immigration matters regarding sanctuary cities and so forth. There's a lot of litigation, a lot of state versus federal litigation, which comes up no matter who the president is. I mean, you had during the Obama years, there were Republican states suing the federal government to stop them on environmental rules. So that sort of thing is going to go on, and she'll, I presume, Tish James will rely a lot on the advice of folks who are already there, and undoubtedly, become a voice on these things.
Okay, let's pivot back to the Attorney General of the United States, the now former Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The significance of Donald Trump's firing Sessions and replacing him, naming a new acting attorney general named Matthew Whitaker. Mm-hmm. You guys wrote about this just yesterday, I think mm-hmm. it was. Who is Matthew Whitaker, and why is this significant?
He's a political appointee. He's loyal to the president. He'll fit right in with the administration. In fact, CNN has this lead up today. Matthew Whitaker, the acting U.S. Attorney General, was on the advisory board of a Florida company that was shut down by the FTC and served with a $26 million judgment earlier this year for what court documents called a scam that has bilked thousands of consumers out of millions of dollars.
So this is currently the highest law enforcement officer.
Well, yeah, he was on the advisory board, and the emails show him basically tangling with the people who are complaining about this. So again, he ought to fit right in. He will do the president's bidding. Clearly, he has openly criticized the Mueller investigation and basically sung in the chorus of the Trump folks trying to delegitimize it. So how does it unravel? How does it unfold? I don't know. What is the first thing he does? Does he fire Rosenstein? Does he fire Sessions? It's sort of like the Wednesday afternoon massacre. Does he take any steps to actually crush the thing? Has Mueller, here's another question, has Mueller prepared anything that makes his removal, certainly he could have anticipated it, has he prepared anything that makes his removal have less of an impact? Are there unsealed indictments out there that we don't know about? Have things already been transferred to the U.S. attorney's offices so that certain prosecutions can't be stopped? Apparently, the report on the question of obstruction has already been completed, and that'll go again to a newly Democratic House of Representatives. So it could very well be that this is too little too late to prevent an impact.
Moving back to yesterday in the bizarre press conference in which CNN's Jim Acosta was had his press pass suspended, what struck me, and there's so much Freudian Rorschachiness about everything that Trump does. The statement that was issued, President Trump believes in a free press and expects and welcomes tough questions of him and his administration, said his spokesperson, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah, that was kind of the laugh line. Right?
This is the line that we will, however, never tolerate a reporter placing his hands mm-hmm. on a young woman just trying to do her job as a White House intern. This from the man who likes to indulge in locker room talk about you know what.
The placing of the hands was interesting because there are a couple of videotapes of this.
Yes.
Apparently, the White House gave out a doctored version, which made him look like he chopped down on the intern grabbing the microphone first, when actually it looks like something very different. In the unedited version, we're at the point. I mean, what it says about us culturally is that everything seems to come down to the umpires going back to the video guys in Chelsea,
right.
and checking to see whether they called it right on the field.
Right. Well, it's also Orwellian. And what did you say? Who and it reminds me of an Eddie Murphy routine about who you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?
Exactly. I mean, this is Greg Sargent in the Washington Post has a very good column today saying that this isn't an accident. This is by intent. You lie to exert power, that there's power in the ability to get away with it.
Shifting gears to New York, now that there is a Democratic majority in the Assembly and the Senate and in the governor's office, what does that mean in terms of governing, and what challenges does that bring for governing?
So the tension in the all new Democratic Senate I think, has got to be that the Democrats are now elected, a number of them, from the suburbs. And so a Senate majority is no longer going to be a New York City caucus. There is going to have to be some accommodation replacement for the so-called Long Island Nine, those nine Long Island Republicans who used to run everything in the Senate. This is going to be an interesting regional tension. Aside from that, chance for all sorts of progressive legislation that would have been frustrated in the past. The question is whether Cuomo wants to do things a certain way, and the Assembly and Senate go along with him. We'll see.
This is certainly an opportunity. This is why unions get involved in political activity, because there has certainly been enough language, voice given to the interests and needs of working men and women in the state. And it's going to be an interesting next couple of years.
Absolutely.
Having all those seats of power with people who we endorsed and supported. Dan Janison is a senior columnist for Newsday. I keep saying you're senior, but you are senior, man.
I am senior. I'm getting more senior every day.
He is also the co-author with Bill Goldschlag. Bill Goldschlag was an editor at the Daily News when I worked at the Daily News, and he was a guy who took Waiting for Godot, a line I made a reference to Waiting for Godot, out, and he said, "This is the New York Daily News, not the New York Review of Books." So wish Bill Goldschlag my best. The column is called The 1600. It's available at www.newsday.com. Dan Janison, thank you very much for joining us again.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
That's the show for this week. I want to thank Dan Janison for joining us this evening. Before we go, a couple of announcements for DC 37 members. If you need help erasing your federal student debt, attend a workshop on Tuesday, November 20th at 5:30 p.m. at Union Headquarters. You can register at www.dc37.net/student-debt. The DC 37 Ed Fund is accepting applications for the winter 2019 cycle. Register online on the union's website, www.dc37.net. And if you want to speak to someone for information, call 212-815-1700. That, again, is to register for courses from the DC 37 Ed Fund. You can call 212-815-1700. Please share the holiday spirit with less fortunate members of our union family by participating in DC 37's annual holiday drive. Make checks or money orders payable to the DC 37 holiday drive and mail them or bring them to DC 37, 125 Barclay Street, New York, New York, 10007, weekdays from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. That's the accounting department you want to send those to or drop the checks off to. Again, that's DC 37's annual holiday drive. And the Municipal Employee Legal Services reminds you that they provide legal representation when applying for citizenship. For more information, call 212-815-1818. Remember, if you have any comments about today's or any of our shows, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. We appreciate your feedback. The producer is Rudy Orozco. The sound engineer is Andrea Minocchio. I am Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao.